The Theosophical Society presents Rada Bernier in a talk entitled The Future of the Theosophical Society.
The future of the Theosophical Society is naturally of a matter of concern to all of us who are deeply interested in the Theosophical Society. Every now and again, we ask ourselves various questions about the society. What is going to happen to the society in the future? How will it go on? Is our membership increasing or decreasing? Are there sufficient young people coming into the organization who will be able to carry on in the future? Some people feel worried about all these questions and about the question of what leadership we shall have in the future. If I may digress here, I believe that the Theosophical Society has never been carried on by young people, in fact. I wonder how far the society has depended on young people. It seems as if always it is the not so young who join the society, who carry on, and when they are too old to carry on, there are a few more who are not so young who still join the society and carry on. I'm not against young people. I do believe a few young people help the society. Perhaps more young people will help it more. Well, there have also been times when the society seemed to be shaken by a crisis. These sort of crises have occurred fairly frequently, and each time there was a crisis, people have asked the same old questions. Some years ago, when the International Convention was held, in Adyar, I believe, there was a series of subjects, series of lectures on the same subject of the future of the Theosophical Society. And as Dr. Bendit told you just now, it was the subject of a symposium at the last international convention. So you see, it is not a new subject. It occurs constantly again and again. Among those who think of this subject, there are some who ponder over all sorts of possibilities that may occur in the future. And there are many others, I believe, who have a strong faith in the future. They believe the future is an assured one. I personally feel that there is no reason either for anxiety with regard to the future, nor is there reason to have a faith regarding the future. The reasons for this feeling of mine I will give you later. Those who have faith that the society will have a wonderful future have feelings mostly based on the past of the society. The society has had, I think, a great past and a really inspiring origin. We have been told that it was started under the auspices and guidance of those whom we regard as the elder brethren of humanity. It was directly under their instructions that our two founders started the Theosophical Society. The extraordinarily rapid way in which it grew from a very small group in New York into a worldwide organization in a matter of a few years, I believe, indicates that there was much inspiration in those days, and it also indicates the reality and power of the teachings which were given through the Theosophical Society at the time. Later on came the presidentship of Dr. Besant, and I believe the dynamic work of the Theosophical Society was carried on by her and her colleagues. Much of the wonderful knowledge given to us by Madame Blavatsky was explained and amplified by Dr. Besant, C.W. Leadbeater, and others during this period. A great mass of literature was produced, which has really benefited thousands of people. There are some who feel that this literature is not of much use now, but I believe it is still benefiting thousands of people. Many can testify to that. I think we can truly say that during all this time, the Theosophical Society played a great and vital role in enlightening and helping the world, and has influenced innumerable people who came into contact with it. It has influenced not only the members of the Theosophical Society, but also those who were members for a short time and who went out. You heard of one particular opinion which Dr. Bendit told us about yesterday in his opening address. I believe there are many people who feel like it, that the society has had an influence in the world. For many, I think it has completely changed their lives and brought light into darkness. So when we look back into the past and all that has been done, we can call it a glorious past. And therefore, some of us, I do not include myself, particularly a large number of members in my country, India, are inclined to believe that the inspiration which has been given in the past will be given again, continue to be given in the future, and therefore the society is bound to continue and have an assured future. They feel that the society is like a beautiful object which has been built up, and they do not want to think that it can go to pieces or just become ineffective. We believe that the Theosophical Society was made as a channel for the wisdom which is Theosophy, and it will continue to flow through this channel. One of the speakers in the symposium at the International Convention last year expressed this point of view when he mentioned various statements which have been made with regard to the Theosophical Society. You may have seen this talk printed in the Theosophist, but I will quote to you just one or two statements which he read during his talk. One of them is in the original program of the Theosophical Society, where HPB says, "The Theosophical Society cannot be destroyed as a body. It is not in the power of either founders or their critics, and neither friend nor enemy can ruin that which is doomed to exist, all the blunders of its leaders notwithstanding. That which was generated through and founded by the high masters and under their authority, if not their instruction, must and will live. Each of us and all will receive his or her karma in it, but the vehicle of Theosophy will stand indestructible and undestroyed by the hand of whether man or fiend." Further, he quoted what one of our elder brethren has said, "So long as there are three men worthy of our Lord's blessing in the Theosophical Society, it can never be destroyed." These words and other similar statements may be taken to contain a promise or a prophecy which gives us much hope for the future. We have also been given a vision of the future and what the society may be hundreds of years later. All of you have probably read the beginnings of the sixth root race, where C.W. Leadbeater gives us a glimpse of how the society has grown and how its ideals and objects will have spread among a large number of people in the world. He says there, "The society has taken a great place in the world." These statements, of course, give us a very bright picture. The future could possibly be very bright. But are we to take these statements on faith more or less as prophecies? I think it would be very foolish for us or theosophists at any time to imagine that the Theosophical Society will go on fulfilling its function and being a channel for the divine wisdom, somehow or other, whatever we are and whatever we think or do. It is, of course, very comforting to think that the society will go on and on. Then we don't have to do much about it. It is comforting to imagine that there are three or more good theosophists somewhere in our ranks, and therefore things are going on well. It is very nice to leave the burden of the future to these anonymous good theosophists, or to the president and one or two leaders we may look up to. But I think we cannot interpret these visions and plans in a rigid or concrete way. Certain plans may have been made for the Theosophical Society. We personally do not know about them. But these plans are probably plans are very mysterious to us, because if the Theosophical Society is what we think it is part of the great plan of evolution, the great occult plan for the uplifting of humanity. The plan for the society is part of the whole of whole surge of life upwards, and is therefore something flowing, mobile, adaptable, flexible, and not something rigid and static. I find it very difficult to believe that any occult plan can be a fixed and rigid one, because I feel that occult plans belong to the whole process of life, and life is flowing and not static. So I think there cannot be a rigid plan for the Theosophical Society if it is what we believe it to be. I think we cannot take it for granted that we will always have at least three men worthy of our Lord's blessing, because it's a tremendous thing to be worthy of such blessing. It's not at all easy to achieve. And if we want such people amongst us, we have to earn it, I believe. The leaders of the society now and in the future will be those whom we deserve. We often wonder, who is going to be our president? Do we have among us people who are going to carry on and take up this office or that office? But I think the society will not be automatically endowed with the people who will carry it on. If we believe in karma, we have to earn our leaders. And if we earn our leaders, we will have good leaders in the future. I believe it's a very difficult thing to interpret what people see of the future. The difficulty has in fact become proverbial. I think this is not because prophets are cryptic or trying to confuse people, but it is because we are unable to interpret a vision of the future except in terms of the present that we are familiar with, that our limited minds and imaginations know. We see the vision only against the background of a pattern that we know, not against a free and flexible background. So our interpretations fail to correspond with the actuality when it comes. This has happened, I think, in the past in the Theosophical Society with regard, for instance, to the work of Mr. J. Krishnamurti, which has proceeded on unexpected, unanticipated lines, because his work was thought of by our members only against a particular background which they were familiar with. So I think we cannot take these statements which I quoted earlier in a concrete or rigid way. We have to make an effort to see the Theosophical Society in the proper perspective. HPB herself gives us a perspective in The Key to Theosophy, where she says, "Theosophy is the shoreless ocean of universal truth, love, and wisdom, reflecting its radiance on the earth, while the Theosophical Society is only a visible bubble on that reflection. Theosophy is divine nature, visible and invisible, and its society, human nature, trying to ascend to its divine parent. Theosophy, finally, is the fixed eternal sun and its society, the evanescent comet, trying to settle in an orbit to become a planet, ever revolving within the attraction of the sun of truth." It seems only reasonable to think that the society, this bubble on a part of the shoreless ocean of truth, cannot have an endless future. It is only a vehicle, a channel, and all vehicles, all forms and organizations must have an end sometime. So when HPB says that the Theosophical Society cannot be destroyed, it is said, I believe, in a certain context and refers to that time and circumstance. But if, as she says, the vehicle of Theosophy is to stand indestructible, the future of the Theosophical Society will depend on how long or how much it continues to be a vehicle of Theosophy. This seems obvious to me. The Theosophical Society also is not an abstract thing. It has no existence, in fact. Only we exist. We make the Theosophical Society. It's not something which exists apart from ourselves. It is not made up of a constitution or a set of rules or anything like that. So it cannot be a vehicle of Theosophy unless we, the individual members, are vehicles in some small measure. If the society is to be a channel, if it is to be worthy of the purpose for which it was founded, we have to be worthy. The future of the society does not depend, I think, on the past, but absolutely on the present. That is why I believe that there is no reason for anxiety, nor is there cause to base our conception of the future on the past, because it depends entirely on the present. I think this does not mean that the purposes for which the Theosophical Society was founded will not be fulfilled, or that the light of Theosophy will be extinguished, for that light has no end. But I think we cannot overlook the possibility that the purposes may be fulfilled through channels other than the society if we cannot make of it a worthy vehicle. A new society may be founded somewhere else, a new movement may be started, or the life may flow in directions which we do not anticipate, if the Theosophical Society is not what it is meant to be. Or our society may continue as a lifeless body, as a sandbank into which the waters of Theosophy cannot flow. I think when we think of a future, we surely do not think of a future in which the society is lifeless. We are thinking of a future in which it fulfills its purpose. So I think it is important for us to see the organization in its right perspective and yet at the same time do our best to make it continue as a vehicle, to make it continue to reflect the light of Theosophy. The question is how to do it. It is, as I said, it seems clear to me that the light of Theosophy has to be reflected by each one of us if the society is to continue. Each one of us has a part to play. The usefulness of the society cannot continually depend on what H.P. Blavatsky or Dr. Besant or anyone else gave or did. It depends on us, the present members. In his last presidential address, the president said, "The future of the society depends, to my mind, upon how much correspondence there is between the benign wisdom that is Theosophy and the ways of our life and action." I think such a correspondence can come into being only as we try to understand and realize Theosophy for ourselves. I think we have to be aware of the fact that we are ever seeking. We have not found. We have been given a wonderful philosophy, a certain conception of the whole process of life, which may appeal to us tremendously. The Theosophical Society has started with a body of teaching which is what may be called a revelation. But all that has been given to us has to be taken by us merely as a working hypothesis, for most of us do not know about all this personally. Of course, there may be a few who do not know, or perhaps I am thinking that other people do not know because I do not know. That is also possible. But I believe that those of us who do not know all this have to be continually aware of the fact that this is merely a hypothesis for us. I think that one of the unique features of the Theosophical Society is that it has this body of teaching which in any other society would have become a dogma, which would have made of the society a religious body. We have this teaching which remains open for consideration, for acceptance or rejection. In one of the Upanishads, the Chandogya Upanishad, the sage Narada says to Sanat Kumara, I know the Rig Veda, the Yajur Veda, the Sama Veda and the Atharva Veda. I know all the different sciences, the Dharma Shastras, the epics, astronomy, everything. But I do not know the spirit. I do not know Atman. So I believe all of us have to say to ourselves, I know HPB's writings, I know the Mahatma letters, Dr. Besant's and CWL's books, or whatever else it is that we know, but I do not know theosophy. Of course, there are moments when we know that we do not know. At the same time, perhaps few of us are free of the feeling that we have in our possession knowledge which has been handed down to us, and this brings us satisfaction of in having inherited something. It is this feeling, subconscious if not conscious, which produces problems for us, I believe. This is what makes us discuss whether HPB was right or Dr. Besant was right in saying something. Most of us are not in a position to discuss such a thing. We do not know anything about it. This creates problems for us in contacting people. For instance, when we meet somebody who is unacquainted with theosophy, and within the first few minutes we talk about our past incarnation as if it is something that we really know of, we often put off people. I think we would not do that if we gave them the feeling that for us this is a hypothesis, which it really is. Some time ago, one of our members asked me, have you had any doubts at any time about various things in theosophy and about your membership in the Theosophical Society? I feel that such a question could never arise if we did not consider theosophy as a kind of religion. Because if we know that we do not know, then there is nothing to have doubts about. Or if we really know ourselves, then there is no reason for doubt either. But it is only when we imagine that we know what has been told to us by somebody else that doubts arise. So I think that as long as we realize that the knowledge which has been given to us is not our knowledge, but HPB's knowledge or Dr. Besant's or someone else's, we shall be on safe ground. In other words, we must always remain seekers, continuously, tirelessly seeking for the wisdom of theosophy, which is the wisdom that we realize within ourselves and which is not to be found in the words of others. I am of course not trying to decry the value of studying or knowing our books. I think they are most precious to us in giving us a basis for our search and in preventing us from going too far astray. But I believe all this wonderful knowledge is meant merely to set us on the path of discovery. It is the beginning and not the end. So to me it seems that the vitality and the continued existence of the society depends on the spirit of search. At the feet of the master it has been said, to look at food and say that it is good will not satisfy a starving man. He must put forth his hand and eat. To learn other people's theosophy, whether HPB's or anyone else's, ought not to satisfy us. If it does, it is obvious that we are not hungry, we are not ready for theosophy. So let us try to put forth our own hands, and even if we obtain only a grain or a particle at a time. It is this approach on the part of the members which will create in the TS the broadest possible of platforms. We have officially passed in the Theosophical Society resolutions on the freedom of thought, but it is most necessary for the well-being and the future of the society, that resolution should be implemented by the attitude of the majority of individual members. If we are still trying to search, not imagining we have found, I think we would automatically establish perfect freedom in the midst of a variety of thought. If we do not have this attitude, if we begin to think that we know theosophy when we only know Subbarao's or somebody else's theosophy, the Theosophical Society may, of course, at any time become a sect or a religion, in which case it can surely have no future. Knowing theosophy for oneself seems a hopeless task if we think of it in grand or set terms. If we think of theosophy as what is given in the secret doctrine, if we want to know for ourselves about the planetary chains or the root races or I do not know what, I believe that we can never know it for ourselves, not for incarnations to come. Again, I am talking about most of us. Perhaps there are some here who do know. I am not talking about such people. So we must not, when think of understanding theosophy for ourselves in such terms. But I believe we can really know it in all the little experiences of life. That is, if we live theosophy all the time. Then if we do that, I believe the rest of the knowledge will automatically become ours. And perhaps this was the reason why the Lord Buddha refused to speak to most people about all the great things that they were expecting him to talk about. You will remember that when he met a peasant who wanted him to give him advice, he told the peasant, "Look after your father and mother, cultivate your land," and all the little things that he had to do. So I believe that most of us have to fulfill these functions properly in order to understand the great things for ourselves. Every small act of deep feeling is far more real to us than all that we read. Every experience to us can be made one of beauty. When we see something very beautiful, a flower or a great person, we feel elevated by it. But our search should lead us to a point when we find beauty in everything, in each other, in every individual, in every circumstance of life. And that is really knowing theosophy. We may read reams about rounds and chains and all sorts of other things, but that cannot give to us our own theosophy, which is an inner thing, which becomes more and more real as we learn to attune ourselves with everything around us. Inner understanding seems to be the trend all over the world at present. I believe that the growing interest, for instance, in mysticism, in Buddhism, in Zen, and all this indicates that trend. The widespread interest, perhaps, in Krishnaji's teachings also indicates this trend. And within the society, I believe we see it, for instance, in the articles in the Theosophist. I think this is one of the symptoms which shows that the Theosophical Society is still vital, that it is aware of the needs of the world. I think this perhaps indicates a movement towards the age of intuition. And gradually, as people find out that science cannot solve all their problems, this trend may become stronger. Theosophy as the eternal wisdom cannot change, but I believe we have all the time to be ready for change. The society must change and be adaptable and flexible without losing sight of its objectives. I think this does not mean that we should artificially try to move things or produce a new version of ourselves or of the society from time to time, like a new model of a car or a refrigerator. I think this perhaps indicates a movement towards the age of intuition. And gradually, as people find out that science cannot solve all their problems, this trend may become stronger. Theosophy as the eternal wisdom cannot change, But I believe we have all the time to be ready for change. The society must change and be adaptable and flexible without losing sight of its objectives. I think this does not mean that we should artificially try to move things or produce a new version of ourselves or of the society from time to time, like a new model of a car or a refrigerator. We cannot do that. But I think being adaptable and ready for change when change is necessary means merely to keep ourselves absolutely open. Open to people and to the needs of the world. Open both in heart and in head. This seems a very commonplace thing, but in fact it is the most difficult thing to do, because I think being open to people and things really means a deep respect for life. Life as such, whatever cloak it may wear, however disagreeable it may, the external appearance may be. I think this is a quality which one finds in the East, too, perhaps in a greater measure than anywhere else. We find it easy to be open to people who have ideas which are similar to ours, who are like us in many ways. But are we in our lodges and groups open to entirely different points of view? Are we open to people outside the society? Open means completely open, deep within, without a number of preconceived ideas in the background of our mind, ready to break out at any moment. How often do we listen to each other in lectures, discussions, conversations, with a real deep desire to know the other person, with no judgment in our minds? What I am talking about, I believe, is very different from being just friendly or courteous. It is not on an external level, the level of actions and words and small feelings. I believe it's on a different level, where the mind and the heart are one, and we are open to people because before us there is that mysterious and wonderful thing called life. It has been said that the work of theosophies is to set new standards and values in the world. I think this does not mean that we should try to be clever, or we should impress the world or hold our own with people outside. I think the new standards we have to set are in the depth and sincerity with which we live theosophy. This is an age in which there is a deep struggle caused by the discrepancy between ideals which are just budding forth and man's inability to practice them. The world, people at large, have at last found out the need to have one world. But people are going through a terrible time, through a horrible period of adjustment, in order to give practical effect to this conception of the one world. This is where I think that theosophists can be in advance of people, by the example of our lives, by our ability to put into practice our ideals. We have, of course, to find out, each one of us for ourselves, how to understand, how to realize and live theosophy for ourselves. Nobody else can tell us. We can only remind us, each other, from time to time. This is the great search that we are here for. Before I conclude my talk, I shall quote to you from a recent talk of the President given in Madras, in which he says, "Let us feel the beauty of theosophy. He does not know anything of the wisdom who does not feel its charm, its wonder." It's only when you feel theosophy in that way that you really know theosophy. Otherwise, you just register a few things in the mind. You must understand with the heart, with the fullness of your being, be able to feel how important, how significant, wonderful it is, how it can fill all your being. I hope that we will be able to go forth from this convention on our search and come to that kind of feeling which makes theosophy for us a wonderful, significant thing and will fill our being. The wisdom that is theosophy seems to me like a great torch of inextinguishable fire. There are and have been many torchbearers, individuals as well as organizations. If one torchbearer fails, if he cannot carry the light and move forward, another will take his place. The Theosophical Society is one of these torchbearers. The Theosophical Society is made of us. We are the Theosophical Society. Whether it moves forward carrying the light, whether it